Norwood slept with my girlfriend on the couch, and he told me to look at the stain on the couch when I was a kid and pissed me off. And that's how the song Lion Ass Bitch was wrote. Hey, this is Party Like a Rockstar podcast, and I'm your host, Joel. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese on the market today. They're lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher, perev, and 100% vegan. If you like what you see, check out the next video. If you like this video, please subscribe and like by clicking the little round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or our other guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle is Joel Rody. If you haven't already read my book, Memoir of a Rody, it's now available through Amazon and paperback, Kindle, or as an audiobook. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, I'll get going here. So Norwood Wood is my first guest. He's a sound guy. He's toured as a production manager and a tour manager as well. He's worked for Blake Shelton, No Doubt, Lady Antebellum, Brad Paisley, H2O, two, the Bellamy Brothers, Eric Pasley, Lanco, Morgan Evans, and Maddie and Tay. My second guest is Norwood Fisher, the bass player of the band Fishbone. Norwood Wood, meet Norwood.
Oh, yeah.
Man, good to meet you.
It's an interesting day when Norwood meets Norwood.
Oh, man, this is good to have a conversation. I feel like most Norwoods are either a suburb of Boston or an elementary school in Ohio. So it's good to put an actual face with another Norwood.
Yeah, bro. All right.
Yeah, man. And I've been doing the deep dive on Fishbone this afternoon. It's some good stuff, man. That's a lot. There's a lot to get into there.
There's a lot of albums.
Yeah.
What's your overall consensus?
It's an inescapable groove, man. You guys, I think you guys have been practicing. It's pretty good, man.
You know what? That's what we did first. Lots of practice. Started there. And, you know, the rest got figured out after we put in a few years of work before revealing to the world what was possible.
Yeah, what, it like 13 years old or no? Yeah,
14.
The ripe age of.
Like, well, okay, so Angelo showed up at age 14.
You're the same year or no?
Yeah.
And Fish is older than you?
Fish is younger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Angelo was ninth grade, Hale Junior High.
Oh, see, when I went to Hale, it stopped in eighth grade. They switched it up.
Right on.
Party okay. On.
Did you ever have Mr. Blankley?
No.
I just remember. That's the only teacher I think I recall. I don't know. But anyway, all right. So you guys were all bussed in, except for Angelo, who was my neighbor. So Angelo, were you thinking of him as like a rich kid? And did you guys all come in on the same bus every day?
No, we didn't all come in on the same bus. And you know what's wild is, I didn't even think about the economics of it all, except, you know, it was obvious, like, most of us lived in apartments, and Angelo, his family had a two-story house with a nice backyard and, I think, ivy in the front yard.
The ivy is still in the front yard and the backyard. Yeah. it's still there.
But you know, we didn't think of him as a rich kid. It was just, you know, family had a house. But obviously economically, it was, you know, there was a big difference, right?
Yeah.
Eventually Chris's family got moved into a very nice house in Baldwin Hills. Walt's mom lived in a house, you know, but in the hood.
Yeah. So back to the name thing. So your real name So your middle name's Norwood, but your first name's John.
Yeah.
How come you don't go by John?
Well, you know what? One, on all of the recordings, every Fishbone album, I believe, I'm listed as John Norwood Fisher. I use my full name, but people.
Right.
So, is that Magic Mountain? It had to be. I was probably 11, about to turn 12, maybe 12, but somewhere in those years. I don't think I was 13.
And someone just started calling your middle name?
Nope. There had to be 11 dudes in line named John. People was calling for John. I kept turning around looking for who might know me, and no one knew me. John, John, John. Hey, John, John, John. Not one of them. And I was like, at that moment, I was like, I cannot go through life like this. Right there in line.
I hear you.
For the log jammer at Magic Mountain.
A lot of big decisions are made at the log jammer.
You know what I mean, man?
That might be where Maddie and Tay met up.
You know,
oh, man.
I was like, yeah, so I was like, I was like, okay, I got to figure out a nickname. And that process went on for a while, right? And, you know, being my last name is Fisher, there was a natural thing where people started calling me Fishbone. You know, just on some regular, you know, hood shit, black shit, you know, Fishbone.
But Angelo told me that Fishbone's because your brother, your brother was Fishbone, and then you guys just started.
Yeah, absolutely. We got the same last name. It didn't stick with me. That's all.
Huh. All right.
It didn't stick. It was very short-lived. Before the band was called Fishbone, by the 11th grade, I started to really ask people to call me Norwood. But did nobody really, maybe until we started playing clubs, because anybody that knows me from a certain era still called me John.
I was going to ask, what's your middle name, Norwood? Wood?
It's Norwood.
That's your middle name?
Yeah. My full name is actually Charles Norwood Wood III, but about the same time in life, I grew up in a crazy small town in Southern Maryland. It's about 1,200 people. I grew up on a tobacco farm here.
Oh.
And being the third, and my mom's dad, they were from up in Silver Spring, Maryland, north side of D.C. His name was Charles as well. He went by the name James or Rath, like depending on, you know, the name that people call you at different phases in life. But I guess about the time I was 12 or 13, I started playing music, hanging out with kids who were skating and playing in bands. And somebody found out my middle name was Norwood, and they were like, that sounds a little weirder. It sounds a little more like you than Casey. So everybody started calling me Casey. My wife, if she gets real mad, she'll call me Charles or she'll call me Casey. So most of my cousins, they'll call me Casey. But yeah, since I was probably about 12 or 13, it's been Norwood. But I think it's just the same thing. It's like it's a family name, so it was important to me. But, you know, when you hear somebody yell Charles, it's like, well, there's about 15 of them in the room there's a dozen Johns in the room. It's like, I think I'm a Norwood. I think I'm, you know, that's a little bit more me than whatever else down the hallway.
That's good. So so your ID and everything, though, says Charles.
Yeah. Yeah. The doctor and lawyers are going to call me by Charles.
Then, you know, it's like a robocaller guy or something.
Exactly.
Oh, funny. All right. So to change it up a bit, that movie they did on you guys, Norwood, what was it called? Everyday Sunshine, I think. Isn't that what they called the doc? What'd you think of it? Did you like it? The outcome of it?
You know what? Overall, in the end, it's hard for me to judge. All I know is that they didn't make me seem like I said anything like I didn't say. I could stand by what came by, what's there, you know? And it's just difficult to judge because it's just my life. Like, my life having an entertainment value is difficult for me to judge, right? Like, I know I live, you know, some interesting, crazy, and in some ways charmed, but you know, my difficulties and all of it create the whole picture, you know, but it's still just like, yeah, I lived it. So they did different cuts leading up to it. And our manager was like, whoa, it's too dark. It's too like, what the fuck? Like, not that, you know? And I didn't understand. I'm like, it just still was just what happened. You know, they cut it, they did a different cut. And I looked at it, I'm like, okay, still just what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Kept looking like just what happened to me.
I liked how they painted some of the pictures, like Angelo being a pain in the butt. I thought they did a pretty good job of that. So, like, you know, being like a younger brother, I was laughing a lot. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, so. I'm glad people, you know, can actually, like, you know, it was well received critically, you know, and so that's...
They dug deep. I mean, they called me and asked me about growing up across the street and stuff. I didn't really have anything cool to tell them, but it was, they worked hard. They hit up everybody they could.
Yeah.
They're calling me.
Right?
Yeah. I remember as a kid, Angelo, and I thought you guys would practice in the garage, but Angelo's like, we didn't really practice at my parents' house. And I'm like, I remember you guys.
We did a few times. It wasn't often, you know? My mom was the only one that would consistently put up with it. And it's a long drive to get to Woodland Hills, a long, you know, bus ride. However we was gonna do it, we had to drive because I wasn't just leaving my equipment out there either. You know, so it just didn't happen that often. But we did it.
Did you ever go across the street and talk to the English guy who fixed cars?
No.
All right. Just had to ask. That was my dad.
No.
Angelo would be real stoned and come over with music dudes. Because remember he had an E-Type Jag?
Yeah.
So that was at my house for, I don't know, 10 years? Like long time.
I was thinking a decade, yeah.
Yeah. So he'd come over with people. And then my dad was this English guy who was just, I don't know, he worked by himself his whole life. So he would just be really mean. They'd come over and he'd tell him he looked like an idiot with an earring and a stupid haircut and a bunch of losers. You guys need a shower. And they always would come back for more. And I remember being a kid just wondering, like, why do you guys keep coming here? Because he's just mean to you. But I think it was because everybody was stoned. They'd like his accent and just listen to him talk.
You got
to
get that Jag back together too, man.
He lost the Jag. That's a sore subject. Yeah, he lost it to the mechanic.
But you know what? Angelo's dad was like that, right? We'd go over there. His dad would talk crazy to us, talk crazy to Angelo all the time.
His dad reminded me of James Earl Jones, because how he walked and carried himself. And then he had this deep voice and spoke, you know, very proper. So I'd always try to get my English real good when I was talking to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Moore was a trip, man. But he was, you know.
On the Chili Peppers and STP tour, do you remember him cruising around with us for the first leg, I guess, the leg that you guys were on?
Yeah, he was Mr. Moore was it, and it was a seat, it was a period where he was just randomly showing up at Fishbone shows, like, you know, and he'd be wanting a party.
Yeah.
You know, it was wild because he was a saxophonist.
Did you ever hear him play?
Never.
I never heard him play either.
But, you know, he talked crazy to Angelo about, like, you know, his choices in life to play music. And he started, he was in, he had his motorhome, and he just started showing up, and he'd come back.
Remember Angelo's uncle, the school bus driver?
Oh, Uncle Donnie.
So I go out this time, Norway, I get real drunk with Angelo, and we come back, and Uncle Donnie answers the door, and he's just looking, and Angelo just walks in the house, and he just passes out on the couch. He's done, man. And I'm still standing there, and he looks at me, and he goes, and you, Joel, I'm so disappointed in you. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Uncle Tony.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, it was fun though.
Just catching the stray fire.
Yeah, stupid stuff, but it was really funny.
No, it was good, but they were both like that though. But Donnie, you know, Donnie liked the party too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's his legacy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Angelo enshrined it in the song Alcoholic. You know?
Speaking of songs, so one of the questions he told me to ask you here, one of the things he wanted to bring up is, and this is not live, we can cut it. If it gets bad, you could be like, Joel, no. But so he's like, ask him why Norwood slept with my girlfriend on the couch. And he told me to look at the stain on the couch when I was a kid. And pissed me off, and that's how the song Lion Ass Bitch was wrote.
No. So look, that happened, right? That's not how the song Lion Ass Bitch was written.
No.
No. That's why Angelo loved the song Lion Ass Bitch. Lion Ass Bitch lyrics was written by Lisa Grant and Kendall Jones.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Okay. He was on the phone. I'm like, when did this happen? And he's like, what, high school or junior high school or something?
Yeah,
like,
high school.
A long time ago.
He's still mad about it.
You want to hear the other one? This was the other one. He's like, he was dating his daughter's mom. I can't remember her name.
Susie. And he's like,
what's it?
Susie.
So he said, so Susie's at the table. So he goes off to piss or whatever. And Susie's at the table and she tells you how she's going to take all his money and she's going to clean his closet, you know, rob him blind, basically. I'm going to take everything he's got. I'm like, well, how come that's Norwood's fault? And he goes,
yeah, it's not my fault. And I sat there dumbfounded. And it took me about 2 weeks to kind of figure out, like, because I knew that'd be something hard, like your homie is telling you this.
Yeah.
You know, she did it. I was sitting there with my girlfriend at the time. We both heard it.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, don't tell him. You know, I'm like, it's my homie. You know, I didn't say this. I let her talk it all out. And I'm like, how can I not tell him? Yeah, you know, but they had already gotten married. They're not planning on it. They did it.
What were you guys eating? It wasn't Southern food, was it?
No, but it was actually Fishbone and Primus was playing in Las Vegas and we were in a hotel.
Oh, yeah?
We're just eating in the hotel.
So he said it was on the Beastie Boys tour.
I don't think they got married that young. He don't know.
Oh, maybe.
He does not know. It was not the Beastie Boys tour because I wasn't going dating the girl that I was dating at that time.
See.
We were playing with Primus. They were there the night before I flew in with my girlfriend. We were eating breakfast. And Angelo and they had gotten married. They didn't tell nobody. She got him drunk and made it happen. And then she said that shit. So anyway, I told him, you know, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Yeah. You know what I mean? I told him. You know what? He didn't believe me. And I kind of knew that it would go like that.
Yeah.
And I do understand how difficult it would be to kind of hear that.
Your wife's gonna totally rob you blind.
She told, not this is what I think, but this is what she told me.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, like, and he stopped talking to me for 2 months or more. We'd be in rehearsal. We was rehearsing every day. We'd be in rehearsal, he wouldn't say shit to me. But it took at least 2 months before he broke. Like, okay.
Why did he break? What happened?
I don't even remember the details. But, you know, and you know, all that happened is after when he confronted her about it, she's like, why you tell Wood?
Oh, no way.
You're supposed to keep that between us.
Wow, she thought you guys were tight. This would make a good country song. I'm just saying.
Oh man, I think if you guys watch that show Ted Lasso that's on right now.
I love it. It's really good.
They had an episode just in the past week or two about it of like, you can't tell anybody anything about their girl or their guy that they're after. They got rose-colored glasses on. You say anything, well, you'll find out.
It's kind of true. It's kind of true, especially when you're young. When you get a bit older, you're like, I've been down this road.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It might be true.
But you know what? His girl that I fucked, left a stain on the couch, and I was like, yo, I told him in advance. I probably told him 2-3 times. You know, your girl, if she keep coming at me, I'm a fucker, and I'm going to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't just do it. I went to my homie and said, hey, man, check your girl if she keep, you know what I mean? And, you know, because somebody else would do it and won't tell you.
Yeah, might as well be you.
Yeah, well, I did it and told it. I did not keep a secret.
Did you and Fish get the same chicks ever?
Yeah.
I had a roommate, man, and he would just, every time his brother would start dating this girl, he'd just keep his eyes open. And it happened all the time where the girl would just end up with him. All the time.
Yeah. Fish used to, you know, see me with, he'd see a girl with me and he'd try and peel him. You know, he was... I can't even remember exactly who and what, but I'm sure he was successful sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever.
Who had better hair, you or Angelo?
You know what? Angelo straight out just got more style. Like, I had to give it up to him. You know?
Has his flair for sure. Did his mom
still flair? I got the best hair now.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're the one who kept it. That was gonna be the joke. Yeah. That was gonna be it.
You know,
I watched this interview you guys did in 1987 in Japan, which is actually pretty fun. I don't know how long it's been since you've seen it, but you know, your kids, man. So it's kind of a cool, I've actually never met a couple of the guys in Fishbone because on the tour I did, they weren't in the band. So your brother wasn't in the band. Remember, you had John was the drummer.
Yeah.
And then I've never met Chris.
Yeah, that was a funny tour.
The Japan one? Or the STP one?
STP, Chili Peppers.
You guys knew, are you an STP fan, Norwood? Wood? I'll just call you Wood.
coming off fleetingly, I did a little bit of the radio stuff that was real popular, maybe late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
And I went way more into like the pop punk and hardcore and metal scenes here in DC and Baltimore.
Oh, that's kind of neat stuff. What bands out of DC did you like, Norwood?
Well, I guess when I was real young, probably like preteen, like Good Charlotte was from Southern Maryland where I was at. And they played a lot of the same local scene that I got into in my teen years.
Kind of heard of them. I don't know them too good.
Okay. They had some good radio success, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember they were, my friend's kids were into them.
It seems like they've cut a decent path of like, they're still out there in LA doing a lot of songwriting for pop acts and stuff like that. But definitely by the time I came around, they were way too cool for school. They'd come back and play shows and just kind of not give a shit and blow everybody off.
Yeah.
So that got to be a pretty good source of, competition. Like if they came back to town, nobody would show up to their shows and stuff. So it got to be weird after a while. I got into a lot of Cobra Clutch was a promoter around here and they did a lot of hardcore and metal bands. Looking Forward, you know, they didn't really move the needle as far as anything nationally, but that was like the big band from around here. And then in 2009, I moved down to Nashville to finish school and gave up on playing music and just went straight forward, guns blazing, into engineering and got more into tour managing.
Or what do you play?
I played bass, but I don't want to talk about that in front of Mr. Norwood.
That's interesting.
I had an 82 L2000. That was my pride and joy as a kid. And I kicked myself every day when I sold this to somebody in Nashville for probably $400 or $500, you know. just trying to do something else that weekend. But I played a lot in, you know, punk bands, so it was just abusing the thing more often than not.
Oh, that's a nice instrument.
Yeah, it was a great guitar.
So I know, like, on STP, Angelo would play Plush every night on saxophone, even though I asked him and when I had him on here and he didn't remember it. But it was every night too, by the way. But did you ever come out on encores with any of the tours you did? I mean, you and Flea jamming on each side of the stage would be very, very, very neat. Or Les Claypool, you brought up Primus.
Yeah, we've done that in life, you know, like, not on the Chili Peppers runs. Like, this, you know, we came up together. So there was a time in the 80s and probably in the 90s where me and Flea did some jamming. Like, actually, we absolutely did it. Like, when we first met, that was one of the first things he said is, let's jam, and we did.
Yeah.
Right? So, and me and Les Claypool have done it on Primus sets, you know. On the Californication tour, we didn't come out and play so much. We just did the one time where we came out with black socks on our cocks.
So that was my idea.
Right on.
I was on the bus, and so this is what happened. So I was on the bus because I used to bring you guys pizza every night.
Yeah.
And my boss was like, quit bringing him food. Or no, actually, I don't think he cared about the food. I kept bringing back all your equipment because you guys kept leaving. You never did, actually. I never brought any of your gear. But Angelo would leave saxophones, the drum, the carpet for the drummer. Like every day, man, I was like storing stuff in the truck to bring because the roadie, yeah, I had two roadies. You had a real pretty girl. I remember I liked her. And this stoner guy who was a cool cat. So they kept forgetting it. So anyway, I'm on the bus and they're like, what could we do for, it was like the last show or whatever. I'm like, well, you know how, like, what was the exact wordage? Cause you guys, man, you guys ragged on me. Oh, I said, cause black guys are well endowed. You should wear really long socks. Cause that's what they're famous for. And you guys almost shit yourself laughing. Like he said, well endowed. Sure enough, man, everybody came running out wearing those socks. Because the Chili Peppers, I didn't know it. I guess they didn't perform that often with socks on. I didn't know that. It's kind of like.
Right. Yeah, it's a special thing, right? Yeah,
special. Adrian Young, though, he's like every day. Actually, here's a cool one that you didn't know. So I was, Adrian helped me out. Adrian's from No Doubt, Norwood. You did some shows. You
yeah.
Him,
so. Yeah.
So he's in a different house now, I think, but in the basement underneath the bar in his house, he had this little room where he had a drum kit set up and he had all these CDs on nails on the walls. Every CD was a Fishbone CD.
Right on.
Isn't that cool?
Hell yeah.
And I was actually just there.
At Adrian's?
It's not the same now. It's amazing. And
it's a nice house.
Oh yeah, I was just we're making plans to have some fun.
He's such a nice guy. He's such a good dude.
Always 100%er every time forever.
And then Nina was the wardrobe lady on that tour on the SDC.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's his wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was.
What jobs did you have? Before being a professional bassist?
Well,
because Adrian's never had another job in his life.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
No, I had jobs. At my first job was at the swap meet at age 11, I think, 10 or 11. Like some, like the Rhodium swap meet in Gardena.
Oh, sure. That still goes on.
Yeah. We were going through the swap meet and I don't even fully remember, but to do, like, I must have asked for a job. There's no help wanted, you know?
Yeah.
This dude hired me. And I went to work. My mother dropped me off. I worked, you know.
You're just selling like flea market stuff?
Yeah.
Odds and ends or whatever?
In whatever he had, odds and ends, for sure, get paid. And, you know, really, age 16, I think, I started working at Taco Bell on Robertson, over by Hamilton High School, which I was going to Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, you know, I worked there, and that's, it fueled my,
Did Hamilton have that music academy at the time? Or?
No. And I didn't even take music at Hale or Hamilton, right? So, but it was that job, that my Taco Bell job, where I actually, you know, bought my first bass for myself.
Oh, good.
And
what was it? And did you enjoy playing that guitar?
I loved it. It was a PVT 40.
Yeah.
Have it.
I actually bought two of them. One of them is in the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, wow.
And one is in my possession still. Ultimately, a really amazing friend of mine is holding it. But I actually sold it back in the 80s, right? I sold it to a drummer named Willie McNeil, who played in a band Olive Fishbone used to love called Tupelo Chainsex.
Okay.
And Willie McNeil sold it to Billy Idol's son.
Oh.
A friend of mine named Kevin Williams, who was guitarist in the Untouchables for many years, more recent than not. Kevin Williams, actually 6 years ago, my 50th birthday, I was playing at this club called Good Hurt in Mar Vista, and he showed up to my 50th birthday celebration, presented me with my bass.
Nice.
Because he said he played it at Willie McNeil's house and at Billy Idol's son's house.
How cool is that, man?
And he recognized it on a pawn shop wall immediately.
How neat.
And that's how it came back into my possession.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a really neat story. I love that. It's kind of hard to get instruments back. It was, I think it was actually Angelo. He lost a saxophone years and years and years ago. And I'm like, maybe one day he'll get it back. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
I do have one question for you, Mr. Norwood. Yeah. When you say you jam out just like casual hang with another bass player like Flea or somebody else. What's your preferred way to do that? Is it just the two of you? Do you bring in a drummer? Do you bring in like a percussionist just to hang and get the vibe on? Or what do you guys do?
Ultimately, my brother would play, like the first jams with Flea was me, Flea, Hillel, and my brother.
Okay.
Like at in my apartment.
There's no chance we're going to see some unreleased footage of that.
Cool. Yeah, any unreleased footage he's at, that would be amazing.
No, you know.
How did you meet Flea and Hillel? How did, because they went to Fairfax.
Yeah, we met them in the clubs.
So they were playing, you were playing.
Flea and Anthony came to a Fishbone show at Club Lingerie.
And they're like 15?
No.
It's later.
Yeah, we were making noise on the club scene, and they came to see who is these guys that are making noise.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we were probably 20. Yeah, because I was 17 when we played our first show. Maybe I wasn't 20. Maybe I was 19.
Do you remember watching them play the first time?
I can't picture that moment. I just, because honestly, yeah. I couldn't tell you what club that was, because before I ever seen them live, we jammed a bunch.
Yeah. So how did that all happen? You were at a club and they said, hey, let's just play sometime. And you're like, sure.
Fishbone was playing Club Lingerie. Flea and Anthony came by. I had read about them from the first show they ever did. Read about them in the LA Weekly and the Reader, right? Because the critics loved them before they even played a show, because Anthony's dad was a hipster. Was a very different kind of hipster than today.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you read his book?
I haven't.
Flea's book is supposed to be amazing, and Anthony's is supposed to be really good too. So
I got Anthony's book and I started reading it, and I was like, I've never finished it. It was almost like, God damn it, I'm too close to this subject.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was. You know, and I'm going to go back, because I'm in a different headspace now. I'm going to go back and read it for sure. And I haven't read Red Fleas, and I really do want to read his.
I haven't read it either. It's supposed to be really, really, really good.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't talk about the Chili Peppers. I think it goes right up until.
Right. We talked about it. But yeah.
They come to a show, they stay after the show, you start talking to them, and then...
Yeah, well, I knew who they were when they walked in the door, just seeing the silhouette. I was like, that's a dude from the Chili Peppers. And it was, and we after the show, I went over to meet him. I don't remember who, probably me and Angelo, I don't remember, it could have been me and Fish, but we went over, talked to him. Flea looked at me and was like, let's jam, after we talked for a minute. And that's him and Hillel came over, and we seemed like we jammed a bunch before I ever saw them play.
So back then, are you all rusty? Well, you've been playing for a few years though, like on the stage. So I mean, were they just amazing, or did Flea get better progressively?
Flea was a badass when I saw him, and he got way better.
That's cool.
Like he wasn't slouching at all.
Yeah.
You know? So
I loved the tour that I did with everybody. It was really neat to watch these, like,
yeah, you know what? And I knew Stone Temple Pilots since before they were Stone Temple Pilots.
So I don't remember who, but somebody, because I hung out in your bus a lot, and because you guys made fun of me, I guess I liked it, a glutton for punishment, I don't know, but I'm on your bus a lot, and I remember hearing that, like, STP was like, they did a lot of punk music in the beginning, I remember hearing from you guys, and that good, and that they just started, you know, they just kept at it type thing.
Yeah, so when I really noticed them, they were called Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah.
And they were more Chili Peppers like than anything.
Okay.
They were really on that tip. And, you know, they were okay. And, you know,
Was Scott a mess back in Mighty Joe Young?
No. Like
drug wise and stuff?
No.
Okay.
No. No, but Scott would pester me to put Mighty Joe Young on Fishbone shows and on Trulio Discrazia shows. And I think we worked it out for Fishbone maybe a couple times. Trulio Discrazia is more, because it was just my thing.
Yeah.
Scott would show up as a promoter. He'd be like, you know, he stiffed me on some shows, on one show, not so.
Okay.
One show. But, you know, whatever, right? And the DeLeo brothers, right?
Yeah.
Like, I played Warwick bass exclusively from the time I got a Warwick. Well, it was Robert DeLeo that sold me my first Warwick.
Oh.
Him and his brother worked in a music store in the Valley. The Bass Connection, I think it was called. And the guitar store, I don't remember. Or it was the Bass Store. the bass store, and then there was a guitar store attached to it. Robert sold me my first Warwick. Dean sold Kendall his first Tom Anderson.
At the same time, you guys went together or no?
We went together, yeah. We went to go buy instruments.
So the brothers teamed up on you guys.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to sell them some instruments.
Yeah. We had
Robert's
some money.
Robert's a monster. Do your fingers split? Because I remember with Robert, every night his fingers would be bloody after he finished his set.
No, my fingers don't split.
No? Every night his fingers, well, I don't every night, but a lot, his fingers were split. He'd have blood all over his hands from splitting with the bass.
Yeah. I mean, God bless him, man. He's a badass. Stone Temple Pilots never showed the maximum of his musical abilities.
Yeah.
You know, but it was quite potent song for song. You know, proof is in the impact that they had.
It was big. I don't know. There's a lot going on there. I think they could have done more albums and stuff for sure. You know, there was
absolutely you got a brother that's sick in the band, you know, and it's obvious in the way that he went out, right? Like, there was a sickness that he couldn't get beyond.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really bad. Yeah. So when Hillel passed away, that's a long time ago now. So did you think that the Chili Peppers would get over that and continue on? Or was there a moment where you're like, well, that's the end of that band?
I never thought it would be the end of the band. I never even thought about that.
That's good.
The sadness for Hillel, because we all knew each other. Like, you know, we all met at the same time, and the sadness that they would feel, that I knew that they felt.
Yeah, it's horrid. Sad.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's parts of it that I was, you know, anyway, it was maybe one of the saddest things that I had encountered at that time. You know, like, I had family members that had passed. You know, I had one of my favorite cousins was shot in the back in St. Louis, died.
Oh.
You know, and that was super sad because he was young. But Hillel was like one of the greatest guitarists that you ever knew personally, right? And the Chili Peppers were on a trajectory somewhere.
Yeah.
And to see somebody, you know, in the prime of their life going somewhere to just go out. It was, you know, and he was a beautiful dude. Like, I ain't never had a problem with him. Never, I don't remember seeing him having a problem with anybody else. I'm sure it happened.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, so yeah, it was just super sadness. And, you know, it made sense to me when they decided to move forward.
Oh, glad they did. So
yeah.
Do you remember any like party days back then, like way, way back with all these guys?
Well,
any show antics stuff like the socks?
Well, yeah, we raised hell.
You're
we were young and, you know,
it's probably a hell of a lot of fun
doing our part for punk rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, so are you guys might do some stuff with Fat Mike or?
Yeah, we're figuring our way into it. You know, we've done some stuff.
You know, No Effects Wood. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I love them. So
I do too, man. And I
they're so much fun. They're such great guys. Their albums are so awesome. Everything about them is neat.
Yeah. And they keep coming, like that cartoon video that they just dropped.
It's great.
So badass.
It's so good.
Yeah. So we're figuring our way through that. Yes.
Well, fingers crossed. So
yeah.
All right. So question for you guys. So I'm trying to ask everybody on the podcast when they come on, because it came from my friend's fifth grade daughter, And she was very certain. And she said, you need to ask each one of your guests when they first felt famous. So bear in mind, we're talking about a little girl. So if we broaden it, and we don't have to, it could be when you first felt famous, but when did you first feel you were on the right path? When there was a moment in your career that was a moment of success? When did something happen, a pivotal moment where you thought, this is cool, what I'm doing is good here? What would you guys each pick as a moment that first comes to mind?
Luckily, that's not been a problem for me. I'll defer.
Yeah.
No, you can take the right path.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. What was your decision to be like, hey, you know, engineering sound is this is cool. I like this. What was there was a time period where something happened where it could be whatever.
And I mean, growing up, like going to different shows every day of the week, going to shows like 9:30 Club, of course, is infamous. And that's where I lived as a kid. Going to a place like that or Rock and Roll Hotel or Auto Bar, you know, most of these venues are come and gone by now, but like just going to club shows and feeling an emotional connection to something that somebody's created and they've given to us. And, you know, just being in a crowd that's just in it, you know, and I realized, you know, this is what's going to be important to me, just in a vibe. I don't know if I feel like maybe I've hit different checkpoints along the way, or it's like, and somebody's really putting me on an airplane to go somewhere.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's value in what I'm doing right now.
And, well, and hopefully, with the position of authority,
it's just to make somebody's day better.
You got a lot. Some of these guys are really big that you're working for. And
well, I can't, you know, the early years is definitely, you know, I was a low man on the totem pole. And
yeah, but not anymore. I looked up some of these bands. I don't know them. I don't listen to as much country as maybe I should, but I mean, I looked them up. These guys are huge.
Yeah. And I've been really blessed to get to work with some really great people who have got some great traction, and hopefully I help them along the way, you know, making it louder or getting there on time. 2019, I flew back and forth to Australia 5 times because the guy I was working with had a lot going on there.
So with Morgan Evans, this guy he's an Aussie and he sings full country. So I had these other guys on there, Dutch, and there's this guy named Waylon, and he's Dutch, but he sings straight country. And I love it because it just shows you how music can be so spread. But why are you singing with American, you know, heavy accent? What affected you? This guy actually worked for Waylon Jennings for a while.
But
really, really neat that this Oz dude is just straight country cowboy.
Yeah. I mean, he had an impression moment. He grew up playing punk and hardcore, and rock is, of course, has a lot more traction in Sydney than in Nashville. So he grew up with that being the big influence. And then, you know, one night he went out and Keith Urban, who, of course, is superstar level country player here, he was playing a show down there and his mom drug him out to a show. And the light bulb clicked for him that, you know, a lot of this really old country and a lot of old rock and roll kind of came together for him. And it's like, oh, that's something I want to make. Like it's something that can kind of cut a new path. For me, it kind of was incidental of, this is how I make money. I realized a lot of the metal bands that were touring 15 passengers weren't necessarily like how I can.
Well, for a minute there,
do whatever.
All the rock guys were trying to do country albums too, because it was like, it was a good market.
Yeah, it's a great market.
Do you have any country?
I
don't know if
I'm still blown away that somebody ever wants to shove me on a tour bus because they think I can make them louder or better, and that's a blessing.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. Do you have any country influences, Norwood? I don't know how often you'd probably get asked that.
You know what?
Who's the country dude that married Gwen? Isn't a country guy married Gwen Stefani? Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah. Blake Shelton married her.
There you go. So you got to be a fan of that guy. Otherwise, you're
in trouble. I could give him a fuck. and nothing against him, right? But I got a deep love for Patsy Cline.
Oh, right? Yeah.
There you go.
There's something that connects there to the way she approaches it musically, her band, her lyrics, her melodies. It's like incredible to me.
You know, do you think
it's transcendent?
Do you think because she died young, it it somehow has a romantic feel that makes you like it anymore, or no, it's straight music. No, you don't care.
It's just straight up. I hear it and I'm like, it sits in its own space.
Yeah, I will agree. Like, I'm not a big fanboy for much country. You know, I kind of worked my way into it of, it seemed like a viable path, but I will say a lot of the most cutting edge artistic choices tend to be from the female artists over the years. But I will say the one time I got starstruck, luckily I don't really care a ton about country, so I've never really got starstruck. But the one time I got to work with No Doubt, it was to go do Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And we did Good Morning America the next day. But riding up the elevator to Late Night, I was in an elevator with Questlove. And I was like, man, he's a real human being. And he's about to go out there and kick some ass. And that was amazing. And you know, it was before everything came out. Bill Cosby was the guest that night. So I was really starstruck that that's a real human being too. He's not just a character on TV.
Dude, who?
But then also,
who would have thought that Bill Cosby wouldn't have died in jail?
What was that?
Who would have thought that he wouldn't have died in jail? Cosby.
Yeah. I mean,
how?
Yeah.
Anybody would have been like, whether right or wrong, not even getting into politics, nothing.
Yeah.
How did he get out alive? You know,
got the right lawyer.
He was an athlete and like a really good one in college.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
He's had a very interesting life, man. That guy really filled his life with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of pudding.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
But yeah, I remember getting starstruck. I walked out with the monitor engineer because I was just a tech at that time and handing, I had Gwen's pack and I had Adrian's pack. And I walked out there just seeing these wireless packs with names and thinking back to, you know, myself being 11 or 12 years old or something and getting in trouble for having a No Doubt CD, you know, growing up in a very Christianly household. Oh. And I walk up and there they are. And thank goodness Gwen recognized that. I was like, I'm just locked up. Here's your pack. She was like, oh, you know, very nice to meet you. I was like, I need to leave because I'm bugging. But yeah, very sweet people.
The whole band are good people. Yeah, the No Doubt guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But actually, I gotta say, like Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
And
the stuff he did with Rick Rubin.
And I dig a lot of Willie Nelson too. You know.
See, but, that my fault is that I don't know a lot of the contemporary artists. But it's because there's a lot of the contemporary artists that are pop music. It's not country, and it makes me want to listen to them. And then there's like that.
Chris Stapleton, right. Yeah,
dude, okay.
Oh, and there's probably a lot of other older country artists that I would love, but I just don't dig in. I know I've heard it because I got friends that actually do love some of that kind of stuff, but yeah, the modern country I could give a shit. So and not nothing against anybody in particular, it's just what I'm looking for in life ain't that. It's, you know, it may be probably, it's probably fucking amazing with all kind of, you know, reasons for people to love it. It's just, you know, it's like, I'd rather hear an amazing young punk rock band or a ska band or, you know, somebody.
Did you go to a lot of Black Flag shows?
I went to see Black Flag. Plenty.
Did you ever meet like, Raymond
a
Pettibone?
Lot? I don't know. I saw him when I saw him.
Did you ever meet Pettibone? Raymond Pettibone?
I don't remember meeting him. I likelihood is that I shook his hand and can't remember it.
Yeah, I love Pettibone. Are you friendly enough with Kiedis where you've been to his house and stuff? Where like he has a lot of Pettibone, man.
Well, we're all fans of Raymond Pettibone. Like that was the imagery that really kind of like he rode the edge, the razor's edge of art, you know, with Black Flag. It was fucking that imagery was impactful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
So did you ever meet Dave Ratt out on the Chili Peppers or any of those tours?
Yeah, Dave's like.
Ratt is dumb, man.
Yeah, everybody.
Like, look, Dave Ratt is such the legend, bro. His, you know, like.
Do you have your Ratt sticker on your bass guitar case?
Ratt sound raised us all.
Yeah.
period. Rat Sound raised punk rock.
Do you remember when he broke his leg on tour? He got a motorcycle in the back of a truck and he rode it off the dock.
Right. I forgot about that.
He gets on, he's all excited. It's his brand new bike and he just runs it right off the dock and breaks. I think it was his leg. It was his leg or his arm. He just busted it right away. Remember Grandpa?
Yep. So look, at 4:59, I gotta go.
When did you first feel famous? Last question.
Oh, that's a difficult one because I maybe was in denial of that feeling.
Yeah.
I tell you what, there was a point where I shook because I felt the magnitude of the power of music. Mm-hmm. It was on stage, it was a festival in Holland. Fishbone played at 11:30 a.m. Elvis Costello was headlining. The Beast, and he was going to play acoustic later. The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones were there. I think it was Pink Pop. And at 11:30 in the morning, there was, I'd say, like 43,000 people there when we went on.
Wow.
And I was like, all I could think is like, because I had probably been drinking all night the night before. I was like, 43,000 people got their asses up and are in this venue right now. If my legs actually shook because I was, I didn't take it personal like me. It was the power of music.
Yeah.
Right. And that was probably 1991.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Norwoods is this. I'll get another
great
Norwood next time. We'll have a trifecta of Norwoods.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a blast, but I gotta go. I got a bass lesson. I do these bass lessons
there you
on
go.
Skype. And
oh, you guys got some shows coming up too, so people should go to some Fishbone shows.
All right, now later on.
Been a pleasure. Nice meeting you all, guys.
Nice meeting you.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe by clicking the round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or the guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle's Joel Rody. And don't forget, when you party like a rock star, don't be a dick.